Therefore, I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air. I buffet my body to make it my slave, lest possibly after I have preached to others, I myself should be disqualified. The vivid imagery of the foot race, of the original Greek Olympic, all pictures the Christian life. He pictures this thing of discipleship. He says that the life which is one of true discipleship is one that has direction, one that is not without aim. That's a good thing to know, isn't it? Because we're living in a world of aimless living. The average fellow is pretty good at earning a living, not so good at making a life. The average person, if they were called upon to put in 25 words or less, the reason that they're taking up space and breathing air would be at a loss to do it. Men need to know that God has planned that men would not live without aim. Now, in the imagery that of 1 Corinthians chapter 9, where Paul says that the Christian life is like a race, and a man has to finish the race in order to receive a crown, and because he's in a race, he runs in such a way that he is not without direction. He conjures up some humor, I think, sometimes in translating from the original language to English, some of the finer points are lost, and sometimes these finer points are points of humor. The picture which he indicates here of a man who's running in a race without aim would be a fellow who's in a race, but he's not running in the right direction. Wrong way, Corrigan. He's down the race, but he's so lost as to what's going on that he's running in the wrong direction. How in the world can he ever hope to win? Therefore, I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air. See, when I fight, I don't shadow box. I'm not around here, he said, to play. I'm here to live purposely and meaningfully. And I buffet my body then. Now, this message is a sequel to the message that I preached 2 weeks ago, the two-part message on demon persuasion and demon possession. We learned in that series of studies that the demon-persuaded or the demon-possessed life is one that is under the direction of the fallen angel Satan and his minions, his messengers, his followers, his disciples. And the contrast to that, the opposite of that, is a God-directed life. A life that is under the persuasion and possession of God. You see that? The extreme opposite of a man being demon-possessed is a man who's God-possessed. And of course, the extreme opposite of a man who is demon-persuaded is a man who is God-persuaded. And Christianity not being a spectator sport, Christianity being a thing of doing, discipleship is a matter of doing, not simply believing. It's so easy to believe. It's so hard to do. We come face to face with this matter of discipleship as being the God-directed life, a life not without aim, a life that is active, a life that is down in the race, a life that is in the game. Last time I touched upon this subject, I pictured the Christian life as or the Christian race as being a situation when some are down on the ball field or some down on the racetrack getting their lumps and getting their calluses and losing sometimes and winning other times and perspiring and working and other than the experts all up in the stands eating popcorn. Paul Williams brought me a sack of popcorn that night as a subtle comment on my message and indicating that he appreciated the contrast between disciples and popcorn eaters. Those who like to say, go to it, preacher, you know. I always feel like giving that sack of popcorn to somebody. I said, preacher, you're doing great work. Keep it up. Preacher, go ahead. See, I like what you're doing. And sometimes I feel like saying, well, why don't you put in the popcorn and come help. And join in. Now, if we're going to have directed lives, God-directed lives, we're going to have lives that have direction. If we're going to do it, as Paul said, run not without aim, but the real direction to life, then we're going to have to understand this matter of discipleship, and that's why I chose to speak on this matter of the discipline of discipleship. It is discipline. Hebrews, Paul writes, let us lay aside the weights of the sin which does so easily beset us, and run with patience the race that is set before us. Now, first of all, if we're going to appreciate and have realized in our lives the discipline of discipleship, we're going to have to come face to face with the matter of decision. My outline is alliterative today. That is, all starts with the letter D. I didn't necessarily plan it that way. It kind of worked out that way. So you can remember it. whosoever has made up his mind. Jesus always confronted those would-be disciples who constantly dogged his path with this matter of decision. There ended up to be, in the third year of his ministry, the year of opposition, only 12 were really stuck by him. All the preachers he had sent out, there were some, a number of women who stood by, and some of these kind of were on the fringes, but of the men that he sent out to preach, only 12 really stood by him to the bitter end. And some of those, of course, left him in the very hours of his crucifixion. The reason there were not more was not because there were not enough volunteers. We have an account of one who said, "Master, I would follow you. I'd be one of your disciples." And Jesus said, "You've got to think about this." One thing he said, "The foxes have holes, the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." He challenged men to make up their minds, to be decided about this thing. He said, "No man who puts his hand in the plow and looks back is worthy of the kingdom." Now, that is not the picture of a quitter, necessarily, but it's a picture of an almost quitter. A man who puts his hand in the plow and looks back is not a man who started plowing and quit plowing. A man is the picture of a man who's plowing and looking in another direction. I came on the very end of the era of the horse-drawn plow. I can remember my grandfather plowing with a horse-drawn, one-bottom plow, and he was very proud of the fact that he could plow a straight furrow. And if a man got started plowing crooked, you know, his furrows were very crooked, and his neighbors came by, they always had a good laugh at his expense. It was the mark of a good farmer if he could plow a straight row. And that's what Jesus is talking about. He said, "Now, the kingdom is not the place for the man who wants to plow but doesn't want to plow. Who doesn't want to let go of the plow, but he wants to look back. Doesn't want to watch what he's doing." The results, of course, are less than satisfactory. Decision. One of the problems that we have in this matter of discipleship is that many of us have never made up our minds. And I say this in all love, that we're going to speak of things as they are. Many of us are enamored of the proposition of Christianity. We're enamored of the philosophy of Christianity. We're enamored of the beauty of Jesus. But that is not enough. Some of us, I fear, have never really made up our minds whether we are going to be disciples or not. Whether or not we are going to practice the Lordship of Jesus. It's easy to say, "Jesus is Lord." It's easy to confess Jesus is Lord. And that, of course, is the content of the good confession. No matter in what words the good confession is expressed, the content is Jesus is Lord. And it's easy to say the good confession. It is harder to live the Lordship of Jesus. Very, very difficult. We must make up our minds. We must decide. There's real power in a decision. You know that? And once our minds are made up, then things are a lot easier after that. But some of us have never made up our minds, I fear, whether we really want to serve God or not. We think we do. We like the idea. But all the doing of it, the deed is the thing, as Shakespeare said, and the doing of it is the thing of discipleship. Jesus said that everyone who says unto me, "Lord, Lord," is going to enter the kingdom of heaven. But he that does the will of my Father which is in heaven. Discipleship is the thing of doing. I recall reading the historical fiction of James Michener, the book called The Source, and he was telling about this little Jewish village in Israel where among the rabbis in that village, they had a very distinguished rabbi who was a great scholar. He said he knew the word so well that he could take copies of the book of the law and stick a pen through it, and he could tell you on either page for a number of pages which word the pen went through. He so knew the word, and the men from a large area would come in to hear this great rabbi expound the wisdom of the law. Then another rabbi in that town who was about half silly. He didn't understand the law very well. And he was, in a way, the village clown. Nobody really respected his teaching. And one of the reasons he didn't do very good in what wasn't a very accomplished scholar of the law was that he spent most of his time out plowing the field of a man who had hurt his leg and couldn't plow, sitting up the sick. And anytime anybody had a need, why, they would call this fellow. And he spent most of his time out helping people. One day, they called a special conference on the law, and the great scholars from the neighborhood, the surrounding cities were there, and the leading rabbi, the great scholar, was holding forth on the law. And in the crowd was the other rabbi, who wasn't much of a scholar. He went to sleep during the session. Here they're expounding great thoughts, and all of a sudden the solemnity of the hour is broken by a very resounding snore. And everybody stopped and looked around. Here's this old rabbi who's snoring. disturbing the discussion of the law. The rabbi who was the scholar said that there's not a man here. All those who are interested in the law, there's not a man here who's worthy to wake him up. But I happen to know that our brother here spent the night sitting up with a sick friend, and that's why he can't stay awake. And that's what the law is all about. Well, I have greater respect for a man who understands a little bit of the law of the gospel. Now hear me. I have greater personal respect for a man who understands just a little bit of the New Covenant revelation and doesn't, than I have for the man who understands most of it and doesn't do anything. Discipleship is not simply a matter of understanding. Discipleship is doing. Discipleship does not wear always the robes of the scholar, the theologian. Discipleship wears overalls. Discipleship has calloused hands. Discipleship fails a lot. One thing to come out of the pure, rarefied atmosphere of the ivory tower. Something else to get down and take your lunch. Discipleship is a thing of doing. And one of the reasons there are not more doers is because we've never made up our minds that we really want to do that. Never decided. You know, I speak on behalf of the programs of Growth Institute of our eldership. One thing I appreciate about the elders that we have here at Westside is that they're doers. Well, they know the word, but they're also doers. And they're leading this church in doing. And I expect to see this church become, in a greater way than it ever has been before, disciples under the leadership of these men. Now, I'm speaking honestly with you. There is a meeting tonight, by the way, of all those who are interested in doing. And I think we're going to take it very seriously. The second thing we come to after we've left the field of decision is we come to this area of denial. Romans 6:6 says that we put to death the old man of sin. In Matthew 16:24, Jesus said, if a man would be a disciple, if he wants to, commit up his mind and deny himself. Paul says in this imagery that we, with our text this morning, he says, now I buffet my body daily. I deny myself. If you've ever been an athlete in athletics, you know that you're never going to do any good in the game unless there has been some discipline before the game. Self-denial. Now, this is a matter that's breaking down where we live. It's easy to share the joys of Christianity. It is not so popular to share the tears of Christianity. And the gospel is something more than a man exchanging his sinful self for a religious self. Did you hear that? The gospel does not teach. Jesus never taught that when he came, lost men would exchange, trade in their sinful selves, and in return receive religious selves. There would be no self at all. It is the crucifixion of self. And a man can just as easily let his religious self keep him away from Christ as he can his sinful self. The center of self-denial. This thing that says, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth within me. There isn't going to be any discipleship until there's denial. You see, there's going to be any discipleship until there's the discipline of the decision. That is, I'm going to do it. Nobody ever won a race. A desperate racer didn't make up his mind at the beginning that he was going to go. I remember when I played basketball in high school. Nobody could play basketball but didn't run cross country. All we did was cross country. Down that golf course and just run, 2 miles if you weren't in shape. And our coach always used cross country to train us for basketball. Well, we lined up at the starting line. We'd have meets, and that fellow that we'd see all these other athletes, these boys in other schools. And boy, we all had the decision we were going to finish this thing. We were going to finish first. And they fired the gun. And you can just see resolution draining away as the sweat poured. And as you come down to the last half a mile, I want to take the last half a mile of a 2 mile race is the hardest half a mile, And you begin to reevaluate. you run along. I'd ask myself, is it worth it? Do I really want to win? By the time you feel like your insides are coming in, you think, well, now, does it really make any difference if I finish this miserable race? And this one guy here, one fellow had a friend who went to the big, larger county seat high school. We were watching a little competition with each other. And he and I ended up in one race, the only race I ever won. I didn't win very many. I won one time, and I was running this old boy, and he... at the beginning line, the starting line, I made up my mind I was going to beat him. Now, the last quarter mile, here we were neck and neck heading for the finish line, and I was reevaluating. you know, he's not such a bad guy after all. And it would mean the whole world if I beat him. And I'm not sure it's worth it. And I would probably have given up, except that about that time he decided it wasn't worth it. And he quit. And so it was a matter of who had the most decision. But you see what I'm talking about. Nobody's going to finish this thing in the Christian life unless there's a decision to do it, unless there's the denial of training and the denial of self. Nobody is going to be a disciple of Jesus by going through life doing what's easy. Now, you got that, didn't you? If your life is simply a bunch of years linked together in which you spend that time avoiding discomfort and pain and challenge, then you might as well forget about this thing of being a disciple. The life of the disciple is not a life spent avoiding issues and avoiding difficulties and avoiding the pain and discipline. It's not the life of enjoyment. That's why there aren't so many disciples that are here. And as I said, we do not exchange the religious self or the sinful self or the religious self. We put self to death. And Christianity must be for us much more than simply a good business proposition. It pays to serve Jesus. Oh, yes, it pays to serve Jesus. But would we serve him if it didn't? Do we exchange service for blessing? If that's all we ever do, then Christianity is not the religion of Jesus. It's simply a good business proposition. I heard a story this week down in Florida about the preacher told. There were two friends in the church, and one of them mentioned he was giving $500 to the Lord that week. He was giving $50 to the Lord that week. He said, why? I said, well, you know, I had a good week, made $500 this week, I'm going to tithe. And the second fellow said, well, you know, I didn't make that much, but I can't tithe what I did make. I still believe I can do it. And I said, I'm not going to. So he gave $1 to the church. Well, the story went on. That week, the fellow written the big check. He got an unexpected letter in the mail, had a check for $100,000 in it. And the fellow who didn't tithe, he got a letter from his mother-in-law saying she's going to live with him. Now, I told you that as a horrible example. You see, Christianity is not paying off God. Discipleship isn't that. It is self-denial. Well, we move from decision to denial to dedication. Where we simply practice the lordship of Jesus. We simply say to God, God, here is my life. Take it. I'll do what you say. This is a very simple thing, and it's so difficult because it is so very simple. Those of us who have seen in our lives gaps between what we are doing for Jesus and what we would like to be doing or what we ought to be doing will not stand up and claim that we are not doing it because we do not know how to do it. Who among us would claim that I am living up to my knowledge? I'm doing everything I know how to do for Jesus. Not very many of us. Well, then this leaves us with the bitter proposition that the reason we're not doing it is simply because we don't want to bad enough. We understand. We're just not doing it. This matter of simple dedication. It's a very practical thing. Simply doing what Jesus said because he said to do it. Simply a matter, as I said before, practicing the lordship of Jesus. I'm not going to spend much time on that. Our time's getting away from us. But I think we understand that there must be the decision. We're going to be disciples of Jesus. There must be the denial, the Bible teaches. And there must be the dedication. You see, denial is a passive negative thing. Dedication is an active positive thing. Christianity is not a matter of simply stopping being something. It's a matter of doing. It's a matter of active dedication. It's a matter of rising up and going. Then we come to the place where we have direction. This is what Paul says in our text, I run not without aim. My life has a direction to it. It has purpose and it has meaning. And if we have made the decision, and if there has been the denial of self, and the dedication of self to God, then we have discipleship. And in this discipleship we have direction. We live out the drama of our lives, the purpose, the meaning. That's a good thing, isn't it? We're back where we started. Running not without aim, running with direction. You know, life is such a good thing, such a happy thing, when we live with a direction. It is not difficulties that make people unhappy in life, it's the lack of direction. Don't you chew on that a second. As one who spends a great deal of his time dealing with people who have difficulties, I observe this.
Now, it is not difficulties which cause people to be miserable and unhappy. All difficulties can cause temporary unhappiness. But it is not difficulties that cause real unhappiness. It is the lack of meaning for life in life, lack of direction. Because a man has a direction in life. If he knows where he is and where he's going, if he knows what he's doing, if he knows I belong to Jesus, he's my Lord, and I'm going to be his no matter what, then the difficulties can come and go, and he's not really changed, not really affected by it. If you've been unhappy, let me suggest that there are a lot of people, and maybe somebody sitting next to you, who's had just as much trouble as you've had, maybe more, who's not unhappy. And your unhappiness, your frustration and anxiety in life is not caused by the difficulties that you have. It's caused by the fact that you're not at the top of heaven already. But you don't really know why you're living. Oh, you see, this is the God-directed life. This is the life of discipline and discipleship, in which our lives are lived out in response to the will and mind of God. Let me close this morning by reminding you, most of you have read this before, the young man who was a child prodigy in the area of music. He showed early a talent for the violin, and so his parents made the necessary sacrifices and put him under the tutorship of one of the great masters of Europe. Master violinist, and he took the young man and he trained him after his own discipline. At a very early age, the young man was put on the concert stage, and he lived up to the expectations. He played marvelously. He had finished his first selection. He stood up, and the crowd was very generous with their applause. The young man, very strange, he did not acknowledge the applause. He didn't bow. He didn't smile. He said they kept his eyes fixed to the very center of the balcony. No response. He said he returned the instrument. He touched under his chin and played the second selection. And the crowd was even more generous. The applause was almost deafening, and yet the young man responded to none but no bow, no smile, no thank yous. Just kept his eyes fixed on the place in the center of the balcony. People began to look up. That's the only place he looked. He looked back. After he had finished his third selection, again refusing to acknowledge the increasing applause, everyone turned and looked, and he saw that there was one man who was not applauding. The man who was just sitting there. This was the young man was staring at. The man in the balcony was the master, his teacher. And after he had finished his last selection, everyone was giving him a standing ovation. The master simply smiled, nodded his head. Then the young man smiled and acknowledged the applause. You see, he wasn't playing for the crowd. He was playing for the master. And it didn't make any difference to him what the crowd thought. All he wanted to know was, what did the master think? Now that's discipleship. Who are you playing for? You see, it really doesn't make any difference whether the world applauds or not. As we play out the music that God has given us to play, as we spend the hours that God has given us to spend, do we really care what the master thinks? And I tell you, I'd rather have my Lord say, "Well done," about the smallest thing that I ever did, than have the world applaud the greatest. The discipline of discipleship. In the coming months and years, many doors of opportunity will be open to you to serve. And you can be a disciple.